This is Via VHS.
So what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Via VHS Retro Movie Podcast. I'm Wesley, along with my co-host, Spencer Scott Holmes. To the extreme, rocks a mic like a vandal, Spencer Scott Holmes. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How you doing today?
I'm cool. You know what? I'm cool as ice.
Cool as ice?
I'm cool as ice.
Yeah.
I resisted the urge to give you a white boy rapper moniker. I couldn't think of a good one where I would have done it.
No, yeah, I just, yeah. Well, they had little code names also on this, kind of on Werby or whatever.
Werby, whereby. Yeah, we're using a different thing this week because Skype is being, how do I say this? A butthole, I think. We're not sure. It might not be Skype's fault.
Yeah, I've come to the conclusion that I don't blame Skype anymore. Skype used to have issues, but the last couple of years, I don't know. It's been Old Faithful compared to some of the other ones, so.
Well, I will say right now that Werby or Whereby, I think it's Whereby, doing a good job. So I'm pleased.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's some technical stuff that you're not interested in. Spencer Scott Holmes, I go ahead and say that I'm Nestle Wesley, white chocolate. That's my white boy rapper name.
Get your rap, you know, one of those rapper names going. Something I just got, I guess you would say, like my Pete Provo one, which makes it just seem like a 70s kind of like porn star.
Yeah,
name.
Pete Provo definitely sounds like a 70s porn star. If you want to go back to those nicknames, I'm Rex Daytona, you're Pete Provo. both of us sound like 80s porn stars, but that's fine. This week, oh man, we're diving into a really, really good one. A movie that I've been wanting to watch for a long time, a really long time. Something that I knew that was going to be chock full of goodies, of just all kinds of awesomeness, all kinds of things to sink my teeth into for a review, and it did not disappoint. we're going to be going back to October of 1991 to review Cool as Ice, the Vanilla Ice movie, I guess you want to say.
Yeah.
Best way to describe it.
You know, the Vanilla Ice movie that's not Ninja Turtles 2.
That's not Ninja Turtles 2. Yeah. That's important. You know, that's something. If you were like, okay, let's say you're 12 through 18 in 1990. Mm-hmm. And, you know, or even older than that. You remember Vanilla Ice mainly because of Ice Ice Baby. That's his claim to fame.
Yeah. That's the big one. I mean, I always think of Go Ninja, Go Ninja, Go, but that comes from the Ninja Turtles.
That's what I'm getting to. Because if you're just a little bit younger than that, if Ninja Turtles was a big thing to you, then Go Ninja, Go Ninja, Go is almost right there with Ice Ice Baby. It's real close. Now, Ice Ice Baby is definitely his big hit, revolutionized the rap game some way. I think it's the first. I don't know if it's the first rap single to go number one, but it's definitely the first rap album to go number one, I think.
Because I want to say that MC Hammer was the first guy to get the first rap, number one.
I think you're right.
I think he because that was the thing, is he's almost like the first like super celebrity rapper.
Right. Yeah, you were probably too young to remember when Ice Ice Baby came out.
Yeah, I mean, like, I know it from as, you know, growing up, it's always been around anyways, but, like, getting it, like, right there on the spot, like, 1990.
Yeah, I can remember it. I actually can remember it. I was telling you in the previous episode, Cocktail, that we did, that one of the first songs I can remember actually being on the radio, like, it being a big deal, was Don't Worry, Be Happy by Bobby McFerrin. But I also remember when this came out a few years later, and this was a huge deal. It was everywhere. Vanilla Ice ruled the world back in 1990, 91. So this movie comes out like I think it was about a little over a year after Ice Ice Baby released. So he was starting to cool down a little bit, the fame. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, it's like, because, you know, Vanilla Ice really has, like, there's three, I mean, he's got other stuff, but there's, like, three, like, humongous years that he really had claimed the fame of just being, like, top tier. And then it's almost like everything sort of, like, changed and stuff, because he was coming off of that sort of, like, 80s, like, dance style kind of rap and so on like that. And then I think the gangster rap kind of came, and that just sort of, like, changed everything up, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, that's the thing, because Vanilla Ice only had, in retrospect now, only had, like, a four-year window where he could be a thing. You know what I mean? Because you look at about 95, 96, 97, rap starts changing dramatically. Then Tupac gets in there, Biggie gets in there. And it's just a different style. It's just a whole different thing. And there was that really small window where he and MC Hammer could make a living off this. And I don't think anybody has rode one hit. Because in all technicality, he's a one-hit wonder. Obviously, there's more. Mm-hmm. But just from a technical standpoint, he is a one-hit wonder. And I don't think anybody has rode one hit song for as long as Vanilla Ice has. I mean, he up until like a few years ago, he had like a reality show, I think, still.
Yeah, well, because he's always done other projects and so on. But yeah, that one song, I mean, like, it sounds weird, but like, out of like probably 10 rap songs, if you kind of almost had a legacy that you could probably play at like mostly any event that people are just going to really know and go ape shit over, I kid you not, that, you know, Vanilla Ice, Ice Ice Baby is going to outbeat many other ones. Mm. People almost, I feel, don't want to hear that, but it's like, that's so true. Oh,
gosh. It was so, it's so, when you look at it now, it's so dated, it's so cheesy, it's so corny, but it's so good. It's so fun.
Mm-hmm. It's just fun. It's just fun. That's just like the thing. Yeah. Because that's what Vanilla Ice is. He really is just, he's just really fun the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. I respect Vanilla Ice, you know, and his, I used to love back in the day. I think I've mentioned on the show before, I was a huge fan of Behind the Music. And the Vanilla Ice episode is one of the best episodes of Behind the Music. If you've never seen it, I think it's on YouTube. You can go watch it. Just all the things that he got into, his rise to fame, you know, the controversy with Queen and David Bowie, how he basically ripped off the song. But, you know,
but that's what rappers did. They sampled.
Yeah, they sampled things back then. And I mean, his big problem was he didn't get permission. But
yeah, I don't think most people did, because I remember, like, that's kind of I remember watching a couple of, like, documentaries and so on, and that was, like, a lot of the guys from, like, the 60s and 70s would be like, all I wish they would just do, I don't need money or anything, but I wish someone would just say, hey, that's my drum beat on that song,
right,
or that's this or that. Just credit where credit is due. Oddly enough, though, Vanilla Ice did the thing, though, where he just went out and actually bought the Queen song and David Bowie song, so he owns that.
Clever.
So he went the full distance and was like, okay, well, I'll solve this legal issue. I'll just buy the whole song. Yeah.
Well, you know, the thing is, they were doing this, you know, they were handing out their, you know, I can imagine a scenario where you're a young rapper coming up and you're just handing out your mixtape at different places, like, listen to my stuff. You know, you're not signed by any artist, so you're just sampling stuff and making beats at your house or whatever studio allows you to do it, and sampling from whatever you want without no repercussions, because nobody credible is going to hear this shit. And then all of a sudden your song blows up into the stratosphere, and then it's an issue. And of course I love you know, Freddie Mercury, David Bowie, I love them, but late 90s, almost all the big hits were sampled from big rap hits, especially were sampled for something else.
Oh yeah, well, because that was the thing, is like, when I was a kid, I used to literally think that, like, I picture, like, okay, if you have a rap band and someone like that, there's somebody playing those instruments, correct? And then, you learn later on, it's like, oh, no, nobody's playing those instruments. You know what I mean? Like, because I used to always just think, it's like, well, the DJ guy probably records all that, correct? And then he just samples it into his own stuff. It's like, oh, no, he's just pulling pieces, you know, from other people's albums and so on like that. And that was kind of like where it kind of threw me off. I'm like, oh, so literally nobody here plays an instrument.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird.
Yeah. He kind of got caught up in some mess. I mean, he should have asked permission. But again, I don't think anybody expected Ice Ice Baby to be the thing that it was, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, the video was $8,000. You can see the outline of the blue screen behind him. I mean, it's ridiculous. And he made so much money from that, and got mixed up in all kinds of stuff. And then Suge Knight, that crazy bastard.
Yeah.
I think he hung him over like a balcony. or something and threatened him.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Well, that's kind of the weird thing, too, is you just picture, like, in those early days, too, like Vanilla Ice is opening up for, like, NWA and so on like that, which is, that just seems like such a bizarre, like, almost like you go, like, at the same time, as bizarre that is, that sounds like that'd be such a cool concert. It'd be so like, diverse.
Yeah. I would go to that. I would 100% go to that.
Yeah.
I would go to a Vanilla Ice show right now.
Oh, I so would, too. I bet you that'd be one of the funnest shows you could possibly go to.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. I have respect for Vanilla Ice. I mean,
I really do.
He's cheesy, he's corny, but the thing is with him, he knew, like, he stayed, according to the movie, too, he stayed true to himself. You know, he didn't try to be something else until he did, when he tried to do nu metal.
Yeah.
Later on.
And I almost give him credit for, trying that, too. Like, well, yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
you know, reinventing himself a little bit. He went through some bad times, but kudos to Vanilla Ice. And I have a feeling we'll have some positive things to say about this movie, actually. But
yeah.
Before we get to the rewind review, I think what we need to do is go back in time a little bit. Go back to October 18th of 1991 when this film was released. We're going to fire up the flashback portal. This is not going to be the most interesting flashback portal. I'm just going to go ahead and forewarn you, but it's going to be fun to talk about anyway because there's just wow. So as I mentioned before, this film came out about a little over a year after Ice Ice Baby. So the star was already kind of waning a little bit. And this film, one of the big problems with it, there was original music, I think, made for the film, like the opening song and stuff we'll talk about in a little bit.
Yeah.
But there was no big song tie-in. Like, you look forward to 2002 when 8 Mile comes out. You got Mom's Spaghetti playing everywhere. You know what I mean? Like, it's a big deal. Mm-hmm. This didn't have that. So it wasn't promoted super well, it doesn't seem like.
Well, I'm almost even kind of surprised. I mean, I you know, I can see his Vanilla Ice going like, whoa, you know, Ice Ice Baby. Like, you know what? That's a great song and so on. But, like, I got more stuff, so I kind of want to pull that out there. But you could just see as a movie producer being like, no, we got to throw that song in somewhere. And it's amazing that it's actually not
in there. It's not in the movie. Yeah, it's kind of a big deal. But you would think that there would be, like, an original album for the movie, which maybe there was, but I don't know of it, you know.
I know he has, there's 4 songs he has on here that are brand new, you know, but you think it'd be almost treated kind of like, I'm going to use this example, it's like Spice World, where like that literally was the second album, was Spice World.
Yeah.
And that's my favorite one that they have of all theirs. But you know, that the movie, the album, like it's all together, you know what I mean? Like they took that and combined it perfectly.
A multimedia experience. And yep.
Literally, there's a video game. Yeah, come on. Yeah.
Wait, you're talking about Spice World?
Spice World, there's a video game on PlayStation.
Stop it. I didn't know that. How did that slip by my radar?
Well, it just kind of came and went. I don't know. The video game kind of got hidden, but yeah, all the other stuff, all the tie-ins, all the 7-Eleven merchandise and so on, like, you know, everybody was marketing the Spice Girls really, really, really took advantage of that moment.
We have to do Spice World soon. We have to do that movie.
We should. I kid you not, like, I always tell people, like, when someone says, like, hey, what's kind of like one of those movies that you, like, really love, this kind of like, well, I don't really consider it embarrassing, but you know, like one of those ones where they kind of throw it in like that kind of category, because I don't think that's embarrassing, but I'm like, I love that movie. That's like kind of like, I guess you'd say like the guilty pleasure movie, but I actually love it just as like, I don't know. That's one of those ones, I've watched it ever since 97, saw it in theaters and so on like that. I was like super obsessed.
Before we get back to this real quick, the last thing I'll say about Spice World, my best movie going story involves Spice World.
Really? Yeah.
So we'll save that for soon. But, let's go back and look at the box office, October 18th, 1991. Oh, man. So, there's not a lot of competition for Cool as Ice. Didn't help. There's only 2, so there are 16 movies listed here on Box Office Mojo for the weekend of October 18th through 20th, 1991. 16 movies are listed. Only 2 of them on this chart were released this week. And coming in at number 13, bringing in $638,625. As cool as ice.
Yeah.
Mm, that stings.
Well, and I hate to say, but this is one of those movies that's almost made for a little too targeted niche of an audience, in a sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know they were thinking it was going to be like a big, like, hey, it's going to hit a wide audience, but really, it's like, at the end of the day, it's like a pocket film.
Yeah. There's no, like, there was never the, you know, Vanilla Ice cult following or like super Vanilla Ice fans. It was like the song that blew up. Everybody listened to it. Everybody loved it. Well, not everybody, but most people loved it. And it was accepted throughout pop culture, Ice Ice Baby. And then it kind of went away. It was, he was never like, there was never a whole lot of people, oh, I'm a huge Vanilla Ice fan and I'm like really crazy about him. He was never this pop teen sensation. And so the movie thing, they were just trying to, you know, strike while the iron is hot, which I don't blame them.
Yeah.
But man, $638,000 opening weekend at 13th behind the first movie ahead of it is Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, which came out like, let me see.
Oh, well, you know what? That
June.
That's a pretty darn good movie right there, Prince of Thieves.
It is.
So that's kind of that's a tough one because, right, you know, especially when that movie, when Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves came out, that was a big deal. Like, that movie kind of gets sort of forgotten nowadays, but that movie was humongous when it came out.
Huge movie. So let's look at the rest of the chart here. And I usually don't go through this many movies, but because this movie's 13th.
You got to kind of see what's
you kind of have to look at what's above it. And it's, not, I mean, it's a lot of movies, to be honest with you. Some of them I've never heard of. So.
Well, see, because this kind of reminds me of the Cool as Ice. If it's 13th, that means probably a lot of theaters weren't even showing this movie.
Oh, definitely.
I'm kind of guessing, too. And I'm thinking that's why it didn't make as much money, because, once again, I know we've said this many a times, but back in the day, you know, a big cinema would only have five screens at it or something like that.
Well, they buried this movie, you know, clearly. I mean, it's like the E.T. cartridges. From Atari, they just buried it somewhere. It's just they didn't want anybody to see this. They realized he was already kind of on the downswing. So Other People's Money, movie starring Danny DeVito, is number one at the box office this week, grossing $5 million. Movie called Frankie and Johnny. I think it's got Don Johnson in it. That's number two.
Oh yeah, I know that one. Yeah,
The Fisher King, number three.
Ooh. That's a good one right there.
It is a good one.
You know, part comedy, part like hard drama.
Yeah.
part brutal action for a moment.
Definitely. Ricochet comes in at number four. Number five, a set of movies that we need to talk about soon. Mm-hmm. And this might be the one we start with maybe in October. Maybe. I'm not actually teasing something. I'm just throwing an idea out to you right now. So if you're listening, don't get excited because I don't know. Ernest Scared Stupid comes in at number five.
See, Ernest movies, that's, to me, that's a big thing of my childhood.
Oh, absolutely.
Right there. The whole Ernest kind of like saga and so on. So, and Scared Stupid might, I don't know, it's between Ernest Scared Stupid or Ernest Goes to Camp is probably my favorites.
Mm. I like Slam Dunk Ernest. It's not my favorite. I think it's hilarious. Because everybody had to capitalize on basketball in the 90s. You had to.
You had to.
Just going through these real quick again. Little Man Tate is at number six. Deceived is at number seven. Paradise at number eight. A movie that I've never watched it, but I always was fascinated by the VHS cover at the store. It's right up there with some other movies like The Air Up There or Private Parts that I've never seen, but just the VHS cover always caught my eye. Necessary Roughness. It's the football with the sunglasses and it's got the horns.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I know exactly which one you're talking about. Because I don't think I've ever seen that movie, but I've seen that cover many times.
Exactly. It's one of those covers that just, great marketing, it just sticks with you. And I always wanted to watch that as a kid. I just know it's about football. I have no idea what it's about other than that.
We'll have to just pull that one out at some point, because that one, I could picture that sitting at, like, you know, the VHS store.
Oh, yeah. And I'm always down for anything football related. Shattered comes in at number 10. The Super at 11. Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves from June. It's at number 12.
Yeah.
And then Cool as Ice is sandwiched between Robin Hood and Terminator 2 Judgment Day. So.
Oh, I was about to say, because I was wearing, I'm like, Terminator came out in that summer. It was like, so it's just still, trucking along, because that's the big movie that year.
Yeah. It's down 14.7% from the week before, and it still made $566,000. So this is about the time probably theaters are like, okay, let's finally go ahead and get this movie out. Because I would imagine the next week, let's just go forward. I have a feeling I'm actually wrong. I was going to say the next week probably had a lot of horror movies coming out. But I'm wrong. Curly Sue was the movie that was number one the next, released the next week.
I don't know what it is. Like,
House
a lot
Party
of times
2.
I feel like,
sorry, that's number one.
Well, House Party 2. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was a huge movie. Mm-hmm. But it's weird that like a lot of like horror movies like are still never released in October. I don't know if that October month is just too expensive to put a horror movie out or something. I don't know why. But like, especially, I mean, nowadays it's like, it's almost like rare to find a Halloween movie in Halloween yeah. time. You know, they're always like February, March, something like that.
Mm. Yeah. Not a good box office this week. Not as exciting, and I hate to tell you all this, but the Hot 100 for the week of October 18th, 1991 is not as exciting either. It's just kind of there. So the first, I'll go through the first five real quick. You have Emotions by Mariah Carey.
Okay, yeah. That's a big yeah. song.
Do Anything, Natural Selection. Mm-hmm. Romantic by Karen White. Wholehearted by Extreme.
Oh, mm-hmm. there we go. See, at least Extreme's making it on there.
Yeah. But you know, the first four, we didn't really have anything to talk about. But then number five comes yeah. along, and Bonnie Raitt says, let's give him something to talk about. That's number five. Yeah. If anything spiked my audio, it was that terrible rendition of Bonnie Raitt's, let's give him something to talk about. It didn't. Sorry, Bonnie Raitt, if you ever hear this show, for what I just did to your song. And what Will Ferrell did to it in Step Brothers. So, just want to throw that out there. But let's give them something to talk about. Bonnie Raitt, number five. Hey, guess who's at number six?
Who's at number six?
It's Marky Mark and his Funky Bunch with Good Vibrations.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and that's a big song. Because that's the other one, too, is I feel like, you know, Ice Ice Baby, Good Vibrations. Like, you know, if I don't know if Vanilla Ice and Marky Mark ever did a concert together, but that would be amazing.
Oh, yeah. That would be amazing.
That would be like the party concert of all party concerts. But for some reason, I could almost see those two guys like not getting along either. Because sometimes when someone's like almost too similar, they're not going to like gel as well.
Yeah, they're going to have a really bad white boy beef about their songs mm-hmm. being white boy rap hits. Yeah, I could see that too. I Adore Me More by Color Me Bad with two D's. Mm-hmm. And then Everybody Plays the Fool, Aaron Neville. And then we got Can't Stop This Thing We Started by Bryan Adams. And then finally coming mm-hmm. in at number 10, Love, That Will Be Done by Marquita. Martika.
No.
Martika.
Martika, there we go.
I'm an idiot. Yeah, we were one away from Cream. Prince would have been next.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that would have been next. I am going to tell you a couple of them you'll be interested in. OPP by Naughty by Nature is coming in at 16.
Oh, wow.
But number 17 is down one from last week. The week before this song had peaked is mm-hmm. Enter Sandman by Metallica.
Oh, there yes. we go. Coming off the Black Album.
Yeah. I knew you'd be excited about that one. So it's not a super great music week. I mean, that's great. But I mean, just the top 10.
It's got Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch. So I can't.
You do have the Funky Bunch. You do have Bonnie Raitt giving us something to talk about. So yeah. those things.
We got Extreme on there. Yeah. I always say Extreme is kind of like, they were like the hair metal band that was sort of late to the party, but then they also found really good ways to kind of like get themselves like, you know, some big hit songs that almost kind of are like almost in a different genre.
Yeah. Oh, well, good for them.
I know.
But congratulations to Emotions by Mariah Carey, who Mariah Carey has so many number one hits.
Yeah.
So many.
That's She just had song after big song and so on for like years.
Oh, yeah. She's,
you know,
I mean, she might be a little bit of a diva, but man, big. I actually love Mariah Carey, a lot of her songs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, oh, number 26, just real quick. Let's talk about sex. Salt and Pepper.
Oh, there we go.
So, there we go. So, there's your music charts for this week. There's your Billboard. It was a very uneventful October back in 1991. And I remember this time. My brother was a month old mm-hmm. Back in October of 91, and we were just getting ready to move My dad was had just got out of the Marines, and we're getting ready to move back home. Well, at that time, home was around Charlotte area of North Carolina, and we were getting ready to move home. And I feel like I remember moving home and hearing Ice Ice Baby on the radio. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, probably.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is still a year after, but I'm pretty sure I heard it.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, there would have been that least good, like, 3 to 4 years where that song would have been on the radio pretty constant.
Oh, gosh, yeah. It would have been. So, that was this week's Flashback Portal. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with our review of Cool as Ice.
Yep, yep. Drop it.
Yo, VIP, you ready to talk about some Cool as Ice?
Oh, I'm ready. Oh, man. I'll be there.
Cool as Ice, October 18th, 1991, starring Mr. Rob Van Winkle. Is that his name?
Yeah, that's his
name. What the hell?
I mean, you see why you changed your name to Vanilla Ice. Yeah, I would. Rob Van Winkle. Rob Van Winkle just sounds like, you know, you're a weird character in a children's like book. Yeah. You know, like almost like the old man.
Rip it's Van
like,
Winkle's
oh, who's that down the street?
Brother.
Yeah. Oh, it's Rob Van Winkle. It's his weird, you know, uncle or brother, you know what I mean?
Rip Van Winkle falls asleep. Rob Van Winkle has warrants.
Like, literally, like, let's be honest. Who names their kid Rob Van Winkle? Because it's like, that's way too close to Rip Van Winkle.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's an asshole move.
You gotta think those things through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're screwed.
It all worked out.
You're screwed with the Van Winkle part. You're just screwed. What are you gonna do?
Yeah.
You can't run from it.
Winkle's just like, just change the Winkle.
Rob, Rip, Daryl, Van Winkle. You're still gonna be called Rip Van Winkle. It's just gonna happen.
Yeah.
So, Cool as Ice, 1991. Here's the tagline. When a girl has a heart of stone, there's only one way to melt it. Just add ice. It's, yeah. Let me just go ahead and apologize ahead before we go forward. That mm-hmm. the slang or vernacular that we're using is going to sound similar to, like, let's say it's the late 90s, and they're trying to portray a middle-aged white guy sounding hip. And he's using kind of dated hip-hop words poorly. The vernacular that we'll use throughout this is going to sound just like that. Because that's the vernacular they actually used in the film. And we're definitely going to make fun of it, I'm sure.
Well, that's what I like about almost like when you watch the trailer of this movie. Because you just picture the Mr. Movie guy doing his trailer thing. And, you know, he's just trying to read these lines like as, you know, as serious and cool as possible. But you just like that guy's voice when he's reading those like, you know, things off like, and he's cool as ice, you know.
I can't wait. I'm going to put a link to that in the description because you got to go. You got to go watch that trailer, man. It's good. It's
The trailer makes it.
The trailer does make it. The scene that I sent you is the hook, though.
Mm-hmm.
That there's a scene floating around YouTube. It's got a lot of views because a lot of people were surprised to know this movie existed in a world. It was like a fever dream.
It's yeah.
Like, oh, cool. Vanilla Ice has a movie. Then you forget about it. And 30 years later, like it pops up in your YouTube algorithm. Like, what the? Like, yeah. So it's very odd. Anyway, forgive my appropriation as we dive into some white boy hip hop. I'm not trying. We're just using the vernacular. So Vanilla Ice at this time, you know, waning a little bit, but they're going to give him a vehicle, literal vehicle and a figurative vehicle. They're going to, you know, continue this train. They're going to capitalize off this. some very interesting things about the making of this movie. One of them popped out right away. I had to go check something out on IMDb, and I was like, holy shit. Blew my mind a little bit. And I think you probably already know what I'm talking about. But so let's start with the opening of this film. Pretty damn cool.
Yeah, no, like you watch this opening and like it's one of those ones, it's like kind of what I forgot is like, oh man, because I just haven't seen Vanilla Ice kind of like a music video in a while. I'm like, oh, I forgot how good of a dancer he is.
Yeah.
Like he like kills it when it gets, I mean, that's the thing is like, I think some people kind of like, they might just, you know, hear his rap and, you know, either like it or whatnot. But like when you see that dance, it's like you can't argue that that's not like some pure talent right there.
It is pure talent. And there was a period of time where that was the thing that was like the like urban music of the time was that. And it was, you know, breakdancing was a big deal and he was damn good at it. Like he was somebody, you know, he was, he said he was always influenced by kind of like underground music and not mainstream stuff. And, you know, you could go to like a cool like underground party somewhere and see people breakdance and he'd be one of the people, like the people that are known, like one of the underground celebrities. And he kind of brought that to the forefront and he is a great dancer.
Well, because he's also, he's like, he's an athlete. Before he even did the rap thing, he was also a motocross champion and so on like that. So, I mean, it makes sense that he's on a motorcycle in this movie, but like he's one of those kind of guys who's like actually a man of like many skills. That I think a lot of people just don't, they don't realize that.
Yeah. I mean, he's a contractor. He was basically building houses there in DIY.
I mean, it feels like in this movie, they even have the contracting stuff in there.
I was like, there's some foreshadowing. You didn't know it when you made it, but there was some foreshadowing there. But yeah, the opening video is a music video. It's got Naomi Campbell looking fine singing. Is it really her singing?
I was thinking it was, but I'm not too sure.
I'm not too sure either, but I feel like I remember her singing in another video. I'm not 100% positive about that, but you got Naomi Campbell in there. And
you got Bobby Brown.
Yeah. And I'll tell you this, too. The thing about this, like the opening video, it's shot really well. It looks really cool. Mm-hmm. And I wondered for a split second, not to go off on a tangent on this person, but both David Fincher and Michael Bay did a lot of music videos. That's where they started.
Yeah.
So my initial thought before I went to IMDb was, oh man, maybe Fincher or Bay got involved in this because it had some of their elements in there. It looked like some of the videos that both of them had shot. And I thought, well, maybe one of them have something to do with this. But it's a well-shot video. It's really fun. Kind of a cool song. I don't think it charted or made any money, but it's there and it's cool.
Yeah.
So you almost kind of thought, looking back at this movie, the movie might have been better off if instead of doing an actual narrative and a like a story or a plot or whatever, if they just did a series of really cool vignettes and like different kind of videos that had just a little bit of a narrative to each one of them, but they were different, like five or six of them. Like an old school, like kind of like roadshow type concert movie.
Yeah, kind of an anthology style.
Yeah.
You know.
Because in terms of quality, the opening is... Is it cheesy by today's standards? Yes, but if you're going to see a Vanilla Ice movie, you got what you came for. Like, that was a great opening.
Boy, that delivers. Just, like, the tunes are great. The dancing's there. It shot really well. I mean, I'll say this, because when I was watching this movie, I was like, you know what this movie really is, though? This is, like, a cinematographer's movie. This whole movie shot extremely amazing, because that was the thing I was thinking, and I think I know where you're getting with it, but, like, just as watching it, though, I was just like, holy, because that's what it sort of reminded me. It reminded me, like, if you got a guy who's just the greatest cinematographer, maybe he's not a writer or director or anything, but he kind of just has an idea for all these cool shots, that's what this film is.
Well, so after that video, I was thinking, oh, it's not, the rest of this movie is not going to look like this. It's going to look like ass, is what I thought, because I'm like, okay, this was clearly directed by a music video director, the opening scene, and the rest of it's going to be different cinematographer, different whatever. Then when the next scenes you see as the movie's getting ready to start, so you had the great opening, and then the movie happens. And it's a mixed bag once you get past the opening scene. But one of the first shots in that, right after that's over, is this great shot of them. It's kind of like dusk, and they're going over a hill, and they're on their motorcycles. And I'm like, damn, that is a good shot. Who did this? Janusz Kaminski did this. This is one of his earlier works. It's one of his first movies. And it's
before Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, and there's a lot of great shots in this film.
Yeah, because that was almost like, I think the number one takeaway in this movie is that it's an amazing, like, shots. just fan, like all the way through the movie. It's just like, it blows me away at like how cool a shots it's got in here. It's very creative in that part. It's very like artistic and so on. I mean, that's almost like the thing that like, I think almost like it, that almost holds the movie together better than like other stuff, which is weird. Cause you don't normally, not saying that, you know, having cool shots, but then like, I wasn't going into this movie thinking that I was going to see some just
right.
copious amounts of very artistic, like cinematography. That wasn't what I was expecting in this film.
No, I was impressed by that. And I mean, the movie does not live up to it. I mean, the quality of the film itself is nowhere close to the some of the cinematography. And then you also have some weird stuff in there visually before we get to the story. I mean, it's there's that whole weird 90s thing that they do. And, you know, this is obviously an editing, but, you know, like the super close-up shots that kind of fade back and go forward really fast, like they're doing like mm-hmm. a Pop-Tarts commercial. Or like, you know, the almost the Benny Hill speed-up thing where like the guy at one point's in a rocking chair and it's going super fast and... Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's got like that.
Yeah.
Right. Well, yeah. There's just those like there are all those like music video tricks. I guess is the best way to sort of say.
Yes. And I don't know. I'm sure that didn't come from Kominsky, but it might have. But it's a weird thing, and so some of that's in there. And then as the movie goes along, that just kind of goes away.
Yeah.
Some of that stylized stuff. I mean, they're still doing their dancing and different things like that, but it's actually, for the most part, looks really good.
Yeah.
So it's kind of weird, but.
You know what's kind of the bizarre thing about this movie is this is what, like, because once again, like, this was almost, like, way different than what I thought I was getting into. The movie kind of does, like, you know, goes in a completely different path. But it's weird that it's, like, it's literally a modern, well, I mean, now it's, you know, 30 years old. But, like, at the time period, it's a modern, like, 50s-style biker movie. Like, those Marlon Brando, like the early Peter Fonda ones yes. and so on like that. Like, that was the weird thing. I was like, dude, that's what this movie's going for, which is just, once again, I would not picture it being that, but... It's going for that kind where, hey, here's this, you know, group of guys and, you know, a gal and so on. They come riding into, like, the small town on their, you know, futuristic, you know, Hondas and Kawasaki's and so on, though, this time around. And they come in this small town and interact throughout the movie. And then they, in a sense, leave off at the end. Like, it's no different than, like, you know, like, yeah, like those Marlon, like, the wild, well, I almost said the Wild Bunch, but the Wild Ones.
I think so.
Yeah, I haven't seen that in a while, but that's sort of what it reminded me of. I mean, they're not like, you know, a bike gang, because, you know, instead they're just a traveling musicians that happen to be on, you know, motorcycles, yeah. But it still has like that kind of feel mixed with, this sounds kind of weird because this movie's proto this, but it has that mixed with what I feel like Son-in-Law.
Son-in-Law, and there's just elements from all the music movies in here, like, because you're limited, right? So this movie had a vision. Mm-hmm. Both artistically and just thematically, there was ideas they wanted to get present, but they're just limited by
mm-hmm.
the story and the titular star, because it's just like, it doesn't do terrible, but we'll get to that. So what this movie's about, and again, we're not going to go through the whole plot, but you kind of have to go step by step with this one, because it's just, each scene almost needs a breakdown because there's so much stuff in it to talk about.
Yeah.
But it's Vanilla Ice is a biker, and he's got a posse, a group, a gang, if you will. And after the opening scene where they're in the spooky warehouse / industrialized whatever, doing the dance scene for in front of nobody, by the way, it doesn't seem like there's a party going on. It's just them breakdancing in this warehouse with Naomi Campbell.
Shooting a music video with like Terminator 2 looking kind of effects.
Yeah, yeah. So they leave there, and it doesn't really even say where they're going, I don't think, or maybe I missed it. They do have a destination at the end of the movie, but it doesn't really specify. So they're just getting on their bikes and going somewhere. And this is kind of how you're introduced to the story and the characters. So you get the great shots, and as they're driving through, you know, the desert areas, they come upon a girl on her horse, an equestrian. Yeah. And it's the girl from, what's her name? Kate Mittner?
It is Kristen Minter.
Kristen Minter. So you come upon Kristen Minter. And she's in Home Alone, right? Wasn't she in Home Alone?
Yeah.
Sister?
She's one of the many sisters.
One of the many people there. She's been in some other stuff too, but Home Alone is the first thing I recognized her from.
Yeah.
And she's riding her horse, just minding her own business on the side of the road. There's a fence. And Vanilla's... Ice decides to slow down like a creep and like check her out, you know, and all of the facial expressions that he makes throughout this movie, especially the first half of it before he learns to act a little bit. It's like it kind of reminded me of like if you ever stumble upon one of those YouTube videos that's TikTok cringe, and you got the young, like, you know, 16, 17 year old boys trying to look cool in front of the camera and like licking their lips and making facial expressions at the camera. That's Vanilla Ice, dude, the first half of this movie. Any of the line he delivers, he's got to whip his head at the camera and, you know, raise his eyebrow. He likes to do that like he's The Rock or something. And so that's who he is. He's kind of douchey. Sees the girl going down the road. And your introduction to this character completely clashes with everything the movie tries to tell you about the character throughout the entire movie. He jumps this fence in a really douchey fashion on his Kawasaki or whatever, hits the dirt, sprays dirt all in front of this horse, knocks the girl off the horse.
Yeah, the horse spooks, jumps up, throws her off. She could be dead for all he knows.
And then he's like, you know, hey, girl, I'm sorry. What's up? You know, and it's just like, this is how you're going to introduce these characters. You want them to kind of fall in love. No redeeming quality. Just a douchebag that jumped the fence, spooked a horse, and tries to hit on a girl.
Well, it's like, I'll say this. In any other movie, that character would be like the bad guy of the movie.
Oh, 100%. The
douchebag kind of guy. That's almost kind of the weird thing about it. This is our hero.
I'm not sure he's not the bad guy in this movie.
Well, they find a way to make Rick even, you know, more of a dick.
Nick is a dick. Yeah, Nick is a dick. But the thing is, there could be two bad guys. There could be two villains in this. Just Kat does not have great options in men right now in her life.
No, she's in a small town. She took the one guy that's got a Corvette. That was what she was going for, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. He's a douchebag. We'll get to him. But yeah, he spooks her. And then there's like this really bad flirtatious dialogue. They're kind of dicks to each other. And then she punches him and he goes, "You hit good for a girl," and I'm delivering it like he delivered it.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah, he's just like, it's just one of those ones, like, yeah, as I said, like, in any other movie, this guy right here would be just set up for, like, oh, here's this guy. He's just going to be, like, douching throughout the whole movie and so on.
Which he kind of does sometimes, but then you like him. Like,
but he's like a likable douche, in a sense.
Yeah, we'll go with that. Yeah. He's like Rob Gronkowski.
Yeah.
He's just, but know, he is a douche.
Yeah.
100%. So he's just kind of looking cool. And basically his friends, they end up in this small town. It's super conservative. Everybody's staring at them like aliens when they get in there. And it's super exaggerated and ridiculous. And
there are, you know, neon colored motorcycles and flashy pants. Yeah,
which, by the way, the outfit.
Yeah.
I wish I could rock that. I can't. I cannot. I don't have the, as they say, swag to rock that. But I would. If they give it to me.
I have a friend, Buddy, who was on that. He did the one like Retro Slam Masters podcast we did a while back with the No Holds Barred Hulk Hogan one. Mm-hmm. Like he likes to buy like the Zumba's pants or whatever's from like the 90s style where it's just like a giant American flag or tie-dyed and neon colored and so on.
You have to have a special type of confidence to pull that stuff off. And I just
He always likes the ultra bright neon colored 80s looking stuff.
Now I like that. I mean, I'm wearing a Gecko Hawaii shirt as we speak. It's 2 weeks in a row. I wore the same shirt.
Yeah.
I had a reason for it, though. But, yeah, I mean, so I like that stuff. I just, and the t-shirt I can pull off, but the.
Yeah.
I can't pull the pants off, but you know I want to. Like, if I, like, if fanny packs, I like to. I don't know why we make the stigma.
Yeah, I don't know why either. You know what? Cause this is how I look at it. The Rock wears a fanny pack. Like, do we need any other better candidate for, like, you know, promoting it?
No, we don't.
Yeah. you know what I mean? Like,
I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, I'm pro fanny pack. Not that there's fanny packs in this movie, so we'll get back to what we were talking about. But I like his outfit throughout the movie. I like, you know, his style for the most part, wearing the Stussy stuff. And then so they end up in this small town, super conservative, and basically one of the guys in his crew, his bike breaks down.
This is like one of my favorite parts. I love how that bike breaks down and then like they all just stop in the middle of the street and Vanilla Ice just starts working on the motorcycle. Like, you guys, you couldn't have pulled over to the side. Like, everybody's looking at him like, dude, what the fuck? Like, what's going on here? Like,
that happens twice in this movie. Yeah, people not understanding.
No care for anybody else.
Not understanding being in the middle of the road. This twice it happens in this. We'll get to the second one later on because it pissed me off both times.
He just like, it's just like, yeah, just, it's just so weird just to like that be there. It's just like, yeah, I'm just, whatever, we're just going to work on this motorcycle, block the whole lane.
Yeah. It reminded me of that scene in Rain Man, like, you know, where he's riding, going to the street and it says stop. And he's even in the middle of the street, he just stops there. That was basically like what that was like. So Vanilla Ice is essentially Rain Man. So anyway. His bike breaks down, and so they're, like, looking for a place to fix it or whatever. Like, Vanilla Ice is towing the other guy's bike with a rope. So, yeah, so Ice and his crew, you got Deezer D in there, by the way, who passed away earlier this year. They break down in front, and they end up at this eccentric, crazy house, which totally clashes with everything else in the neighborhood. And you meet this these crazy couple, and one of them is... the guy that, what is his name from One Flew of the Cuckoo's Nest?
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I can't remember his character's name in there, but he's one of the more eccentric characters in that movie, which are all eccentric, but he's particularly Chadwick or Chadwick or something like that in One Flew of the Cuckoo's Nest. He's in there. And then there's this other lady who I remember from sitcoms back in the day, and there's this crazy eccentric couple, and they're going to fix this bike. And I thought they were going to be like mentors later on in the movie.
No.
And like they have a role in it, but no, they're just kind of there doing a terrible job of fixing this bike. They are there to do a bad job of fixing this bike so a movie can happen.
Yeah, just to lock these characters into the town. That's like their whole like purpose. But I think just to distract you from it, their house is just set up where it's just all neon colored. There's like globes, like world globes outside lined up. Just like the whole design, like inside it's got like words printed all over the walls and everything like that. The TV has a garden coming out of it. It's just one of those, it just reminds me like that. That's how this movie sort of is. It's like you just got a bunch of artistic people together and just said like, hey, I know you always wanted to freely design your own sets. Well, here, have at it.
Well, that, and it's just like, it has music, video, imagery. Like, anytime that they cut back to that house, there'll be people randomly breakdancing or just eating, you know, anchovy.
Weird meals.
Yeah, anchovy, pickle, peanut butter, mustard sandwiches.
Mustard.
Yeah. But other than that, it'll be like really cool shots of them just kind of, it looks like a music video. It was designed to be kind of weird, wacky, early 90s music video stuff. And so most of the gang hangs out there the whole movie. They're just kind of stuck there.
Yeah, like they literally never, I don't think the rest of the gang really ever leaves that house for some reason.
Yeah, they don't. You don't. They go to one other, they go to the show.
Oh, they go to the, like the old rundown bar. Yeah, that's about it.
They go
it,
to the Footloose moment, which we'll get to. But yeah, so they're kind of stuck there. So that's kind of where this movie is. And then while they're hanging out there is the scene. That has been floating around YouTube, and the scene that I showed you, and you saw this scene, and you're like, we got to watch this movie.
Sold. I was sold instantly by that scene.
Yeah, it's so, and it's the, I would say it's the worst scene in the movie, but in the best way.
Yeah, well, it really just, I don't know, like, I will say just the weird clash between, in a sense, you have this very, like, you know, bread and butter kind of neighborhood, just kind of regular folks, you know. It's sort of small town, not like ridiculously small, but like kind of there. And then you just have Vanilla Ice. And I think just the whole point of him being like so like ginormously charismatic in his style, clashing against these regular people, I think just what makes that hilarious, like to all be.
When Nick, he walks up to the two characters, so we'll set it up. So he's out there breakdancing or doing just kind of, you know, he's cooling, as he says.
Yeah.
What are you doing? I'm just cooling. I'm just cooling. Because he's ice. So he's out there cooling. And then Kat and her boyfriend, Nick, ride up in their Corvette and they get out of the car and he's going to go into his house. And he's like, hey, that's the girl on the horse. So he's like, I'm going to go over there and, you know, shoot my shot and go talk to her. And so he walks to their picket fence and Nick is like, what is that? And I'm like, that's what we're all thinking, Nick. Even though he's a huge douchebag. And the dialogue in that is hilarious. I might put that in the link too. But the best part of it, I thought, with all the terrible dialogue, was the part where he goes, what's your name? She goes, Catherine. He goes, Catherine. Pause. Cat. Like he just like invented like it's just so bad. Oh my gosh. And then he says drop the zero, get with the hero.
Yeah. That's almost like the big takeaway, like trailer moment line.
It is. Yeah, it really is. It's damn. That whole scene is just gold.
See, and that's the stuff that all reminds me a lot of Son-in-Law. You know, ironically, this movie's before Son-in-Law, so it's kind of weird that it has that, because, you know, in a sense, Vanilla Ice is literally like the Pauly Shore character in this, except for instead of Pauly Shore being kind of the fun, wacky, kind of almost like slightly nerdy yet cool guy, Vanilla Ice is the other way around, where it's like he's just the ultra cool, kind of serious guy, you know, and here he comes into, like, you know, this small town. You know, it's not necessarily a farm zone, but I mean, this was close enough. There's horses and everything, I guess, too. Mm-hmm. They all live in the suburb. But and then there you go. Even got the douchebag like local boyfriend and everything like that. No different than Son-in-Law. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's I would like to imagine that there was actually a meeting somewhere where some guy walked into a room and says, "Okay, I want to remake Cool as Ice, but with Pauly Shore."
Yeah,
I want to imagine that was a real life thing that happened. Somebody had that idea. Yeah, it is kind of similar, and it kind of, you know, you make him the counterculture anti-hero is what you're trying to do. You're trying to, you know, do what they do with all these music movies, you know, Purple Rain and all these other different things. Mm-hmm. 8 Mile, all the stuff. There's a lot of parallels actually with this and 8 Mile, not just white rappers. It's just, you know, the way they promoted both films were drastically different, but two different types of rap. Also, Eminem has, you know, way more talent than Vanilla Ice.
Vanilla Ice could probably dance better than him.
Oh yeah, he could definitely dance better than him.
I know that that's not what Eminem's probably ever shooting for.
No.
What's the dance better than Vanilla Ice?
Yeah, so he goes over, talks to Kat, doesn't work out, and, you know, the movie is starting to have a little bit of a plot, because you insert this whole subplot about Kat and her family. She doesn't know this. Uh-huh. But they're in witness protection. There was some type of thing that happened back right before a Kat was born, and her dad got into mixed stuff. So they're living in this neighborhood as part of witness protection. Their parents have different names than they realize. All this different stuff. You revealed this later in the movie. So there's these two henchmen that are after the family because they saw Kat's dad in a TV interview, and they're after him. So Vanilla Ice just happens to show up at this town at the perfect time to get involved in all this nefarious activity and fall in love with Kat. This world-class equestrian probably has scholarships to great colleges and way better options, but here comes Vanilla Ice. So,
and Vanilla Ice is always at the wrong place at the right time. Like, yes. You know what I mean, like, that's almost like the main. It's like he's not doing anything necessarily wrong, but like he just happens to be outside talking to these henchmen, you know, who are giving him shit. But of course, the dad sees it out the window. Like, they must be connected.
Well, why wouldn't you think so? And here's the thing: this whole movie. Yeah. You know, later on, as things go to shit, and the dad's super paranoid because people are after him, and it never really explains what exactly he did.
Yeah,
I think he just sold.
Well, I think what it was is the way that I kind of like in the tidbits in that movie was that the dad was a police officer. There were some dirty cops. He turned those dirty cops in, and that's how he got into witness protection. So those henchmen guys are technically just dirty cops. Yeah. In a sense. I want to say that that's sort of what it was, but it didn't almost go into it as much. That almost needed like a flashback scene or something.
And then also they're like, we want $500,000. You got yours. We want ours. Well, so I was expecting to hear some type of situation where his partner did something bad and he got the money too. And then he decided to roll over on his partners and just like Goodfellas. And then he gets to stay out because he, you know, turned everybody in, but he has to go into witness protection. No, it really never explains what he did. Look, it doesn't matter. Okay, it's the Vanilla Ice movie, but it's still, you know, come on, flush it out a little bit. Okay, if you're going to introduce this plot, but it didn't really need this. It could have just been a Footloose thing where uptight town, this guy's hip hop. We're going to make the town hip hop by doing hip hop stuff. Like, that's all you really needed. You didn't need this like gangster subplot, I don't think.
Well, it's kind of weird because it's like I actually did picture this movie being like a little bit more of like a comedy, you know, maybe with, you know, some romance or something like that. But I almost picture it being more like that. And it's actually more of a drama like romance movie. It's kind of weird. There's actually not, I mean, there's stuff that, the only stuff that's kind of funny is, it's funny in just more like awkward ways, but it's not funny like as in like the movie's, it's not written as a comedy or anything like that for the most part. You know, yeah. It's written as a drama, which is kind of bizarre. Like, it's just, you don't expect that to be what this movie is.
No, it gets actually towards the end, it gets really dark for a minute. And
yeah.
I was like, this is not the lighthearted tone I wanted. I want Vanilla Ice, okay? But they were trying to make Vanilla Ice look cool and look edgy, which is not going to work. And, you know, I mean, the movie does showcase Vanilla Ice pretty well in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
And the corniness and what he is. But this is not what they needed to do with it. But, you know, the dad's all paranoid by him doing bad things. And then she's always like, he's not a criminal. He's not what you think. And the movie's trying to tell you Vanilla Ice is a good guy. But let's see. First of all, he steals her portfolio thing with like her information for her college scholarships, like really important information.
Yeah.
So during that Nick is a dick scene, he kind of steals that, I think. I think this one he did it.
Yeah, he does it right
there. Yeah, okay. So he steals this thing. And then also like twice in the movie, I can think of him just breaking into her house.
Yeah. Well, there's even a part where like you think about like he literally breaks into her house a little bit later in the movie and just like as she's asleep, he's just laying there next to bed and he like drizzles some like strawberries into her mouth.
No, it was ice.
Oh, was that what it was?
Ice. I'm like,
that makes more sense.
This is almost as
which is like she's only really seen this guy like twice so far in the movie, and all of a sudden he's like laying in her bed next to her, like
yeah, like yeah, she's asleep and he puts ice in her mouth, and this is at the scene after they kind of have their little breakthrough moment. So we'll talk about that in a minute, but yeah, I'm like that was just you don't know where those hands have been, you know, that's just kind of gross. It's just really weird. It comes off weird. What is it about anytime there's a movie involving ice? The puns, you have to have them. Batman and Robin.
Like Batman and Robin?
Batman and Robin. How many ice puns can we get in here? This one has more visual ice puns.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah, because there's like a lot of drink spilling and there's big ice cubes in it. So there's like visual ice references. And
like slow motion, like shatters.
Yeah, it's just, oh gosh, it's just, it's weird. Basically, where this movie starts to take off really is, you know, they're at this little place called the Sugar Shack, where everybody hangs out.
Which, for you know, a guy in a Corvette, it's like the most rundown, funky bar.
It's hard to. It's almost like I don't even think it's a bar. It's like a teen, like club kind of thing. I guess.
Yeah, it's like the place that probably if you're over the age of 23, you don't go there.
Right. Yeah, and it doesn't look. It was actually poorly designed. Thing because yeah, you can't tell if it's a restaurant, is a dance hall. Like, what is this place? Doesn't matter. It's a Sugar Shack. It sounds like that would be like, you know, a cat house or something, the Sugar Shack, but it's not. So they go there. There's this really bad music playing, and it's very exaggerated, very type, like music video style type, you know, iconography. And it's run down and beat up and boring. And then Vanilla Ice enters like the Kool-Aid Man.
Like, yeah, literally.
And he kind of comes in there and livens up the party. And Nick is there being a dick, trying to get Kat to drink. And he's like, I'm going to drink this stuff. She's like, no, you're very date rapey. And, you know, like, don't do that.
and you got to drive home and everything like that. Vet, you know.
I know in the future, Nick wraps that around a tree. He wraps that vet around a tree. Yeah. He survives, though.
Yeah, he has to.
And his friends all wear polos. They're regional sales something other and they years later they'll storm the Capitol. So
yeah. that's where Nick the Dick's life's going.
He watches OAN for sure.
So what he just does is he hangs out at this club with like really terrible music. Like, I mean, like
intentionally
it's like these guys are playing like, you know, real funky stuff. I will say though, the guitar player though has like this like neon pink like BC Rich guitar, and I'm like, that guitar is way too cool for that guy to have.
Yeah,
like I was looking at him like, dude, that's one of the coolest guitars I think I've ever seen, like in anything. Yeah. And I'm like, this guy should not that should be in CeCe DeVille's hands, not this guy.
Yeah, it was actually really cool. That was the one thing that kind of stood out from that. And so this place is run down, boring looking. Vanilla Ice comes in. He unplugs the equipment, takes over the stage, does a dance routine. And cat who has been mean to him and snarky with him this whole movie up to this point, for good reason, decides to go over there and dance with Vanilla Ice in front of all these conservatives. And he basically just dry humps her into submission.
Pretty much, yeah. He just throws her to the floor, jumps on top of her, spins her around, and so on. Everybody else is probably... I feel like all the people here got to be so confused because this music's so probably bizarre to them. I mean, in general, like Vanilla Ice, just to anybody, is kind of a bizarre-looking character. You know what I mean? There's no... No matter where he's going to go, it's almost like, other than his own friends, he's never going to exactly fit in. Yeah. So everybody here, I'm surprised they're even getting into it, because that would be the thing. It'd be so radical that he'd almost be like, I hate to sort of say it, but like if he was really in one of these small towns like this, he would almost be probably the laughing stock, and he would almost be like driven out of town because of that. Yeah. It would have been one of those other kind of like dark dramas where like all next thing you know, there's like some weird torture scene where like the guy's got him like hung up in like a barn and so on.
Like the scene in Pulp Fiction or Zed. he's not turning this town into hip-hop heads. Okay, he's just not. This town, actually, the music they were playing wasn't even appropriate. It should have been George Strait or something. Should have been some.
yeah because it's like they just have this weird, like, I don't know, 70s-ish, like, sort of blues rock, sort of like a real, I don't know what the heck it really is, but it's just, yeah, I feel like that's almost what this movie almost should have had, a very country theme and then mixed in the Vanilla Ice, because I felt like that would have clashed better instead of having this kind of like almost sort of like preppy, like knockoff kind of like, you know, collared shirt rock type stuff. I feel like I'm gonna use Son-in-Law, because Son-in-Law almost feels like it takes this concept and kind of works it like much better, because like that almost like you have Pauly Shore who comes in and he does the weird things, and he's kind of got like almost like the post 80s sort of like rocker kind of look and so on, and him being combined into like, you know, a farm town, he's just so out of place. And I almost feel like they almost need to make this town even more out of place for Vanilla Ice to be.
Yeah,
there.
It just it's weird, and they never really don't go through with that enough, but it's, you know, the focus is on Nick and his dickness at this point. And so a bunch of things happen right after this show. Okay. So that are really important. So after Vanilla Ice basically dry humps her into submission, she all of a sudden likes him and is infatuated with him. Nick and Kat get into a huge fight outside the club, where he's very possessive and very mean and demanding.
Yeah.
She decides to walk home. And this bitch is walking in the middle of the street, just like Vanilla Ice was. She is not. There's sidewalks.
There's sidewalks. She's, both sides.
And she keeps looking behind her like, why is this car following me? Bitch, you in the middle of the street.
Could be anybody.
It irritates me. It irritates me.
Yeah.
And so, of course, it's the thugs from before that we've been introduced to a couple times that are trying to intimidate the father figure. Vanilla Ice, because he's Vanilla Ice. And he's cool as ice.
He just comes
out of nowhere on his bike. He's like, get on my bike. And he drives her home. And then the next day is when he breaks into her house and gives her the ice cube.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And then he comes in there just hanging out and so on. And of course, like, you know, Kat's little young brother, whatnot, just thinks Vanilla Ice is the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, that's actually a good. So it's Tommy from Timmy Timmons from Sandlot.
Oh, that's right.
Timmy and Tommy Timmons. He's Timmy Timmons, but this movie, he's Tommy. It's weird. That's so, a little bit of weird. It's just odd foreshadowing, I guess. But yeah, so yeah, the brother's like, are you guys going to make sex? I actually like the little brother character in this.
No, I did too. Like that, you know, he kind of, you know, does a good job acting and everything in this too. He's kind of he's actually the funniest character probably in this thing, oddly enough. He's the guy who's probably cracking more little jokes than anybody
else.
Might
be the best actor in this movie.
Yeah. You know, he's got this, there's that scene where he's playing Super Mario Brothers 3, but it's kind of weird because it's like, it never shows clips of Super Mario Brothers 3, but the music plays and the sound effects play. I thought that was kind of a weird, that was almost like that thing where it's like, it's legal for us to have the sounds, but we don't have the pictures.
Yeah, I can see, Nintendo's really funny about that kind of stuff. I could see even back, especially back then, I could see them kind of jumping in and, you know, doing something, and they had to find some workaround or something.
Yeah, because then they have Tecmo Super Bowl later.
Yeah, and they show that.
The kids playing.
Blatantly.
Yeah, and they show that one.
Yeah, that was really cool. I like some of the 90s callbacks in this, some of the pop culture stuff that's in here that you kind of notice a little bit along the way. And, yeah, so, I mean, the movie's just kind of, from this point on, it's just them flirting. They go to a construction site and play hide and seek in a sundress.
Yeah.
And there's like...
And it has super music video, like spinning camera, Michael Bay-ish kind of shots, yes. Which are technically John Woo shots.
Yes. A lot of that stuff, him breakdancing in the salt flats, it looks like, for no reason. And yeah, they're at this construction site and just flirting, and it's just dumb. It's really dumb. There's like some mall soft music going on. It is what it is, but you gotta have the characters fall in love, and they do it okay.
Yeah. Well, I feel it's that kind of thing. Like, I will say the love story almost kind of does work because you have this guy, once again, who's so bizarre and so different, and I feel like that's almost. It's almost like, you know, she's bored with the kind of like the same old, the almost the generic life. Because you look at all like the friends she has, this and so on. Like everybody's kind of like cookie
cutters. They're bitches, aren't they?
Well, and Vanilla Ice shows up and here's this radical guy from, you know, God knows where, you know, and he's completely different, super unique. Like, so I feel like that kind of like, even if it's a quick kind of like get to the romance part, that actually kind of works.
Yeah. By the way, I just want to touch on something real quick. It happens twice in this movie also. At the end of that concert scene, right before they start falling in love and all the bad stuff happens, she confronts him about the little portfolio thing and says, I want it back. He goes, well, if that's all you want it back, why you dance with me? And she's like, to show you I could. But you didn't, though, Kat, because you can't dance.
Yeah.
You couldn't dance there. And at the end of the movie, she has a dance scene. She cannot dance.
No, it's one of those ones.
And by the way, I don't know if you read the trivia. You and I have talked about before that don't believe all the trivia when it comes to who they almost casted for the movie. But apparently, Gwyneth Paltrow almost took that role, and her dad told her not to.
And I think, well, I just feel that's her dad, probably no different than Kat's dad in the movie, would be like, no, I don't want you hanging out with that Vanilla Ice fella.
Yeah, please don't. Please don't.
Because you think about it, like, because that's still that time. I mean, even nowadays, but I mean, things have kind of changed now. But like, that's that time period where parents were like, no, not the rap. Anything but the rap, guys. Like, I don't know. There was almost like such a hatred towards rap music. I think it's like many things. They just didn't listen to it enough to kind of see what it was all about. It was just an instantaneous like hatred. Like almost like you didn't have to listen to it. You just like, I know I don't like it. Kind of parent ad.
Yeah, definitely. And I could see where was her dad when Shallow Hal came out? Could have stopped her from that shit. Anyway, so yeah, the movie goes along. Nick and his friends, his 4-H friends, go to his house and beat up what they think is Vanilla Ice's bike. And it's his friend's bike, but there is a terrible fight scene that ensues. Pretty bad.
You get almost like your martial arts scene of Vanilla Ice, like, come by and kicking these guys' asses and so on like that. Well, because I think that's almost the other thing, too, that once again, I'll say this, that sort of separates this movie from Son-in-Law. I know it sounds like the weird thing to kind of go back and forth on, but like, I feel like someone like Pauly Shore, see, like, Vanilla Ice is always sold off as cool. Like, he's always going to win the fight. He's always going to be, like, the badass. He's always going to have the right lines. Where Pauly Shore would have, you know, he would have got beat up there, but then that's almost where the sympathy would have came, because he's the guy who's like, he kind of messes up. He's not perfect. He, you know what I mean? He's got, like, you know, almost, you know, more flaws and so on. But at the end of the day, he does the right thing. He's the good friend and so on.
Yeah, Vanilla Ice, the character development here is that he's just cooler than everybody else. He's cool as ice. And he's going to bust your ice no matter what. And these guys fight, and he just, he beats up his 4-H friends. Terrible fight scene.
Sends Nick to the hospital.
You've had, so far in this movie, you've had Vanilla Ice. You've had Equestrian Ice. You've had Biker Ice. And now you have Karate Ice. And he can do anything. He's just a cool guy that could do anything. Basically the movie at this point kind of just shifts into the kidnapping and all the into thugs and all that ridiculous stuff that he gets wrapped up in. And that's basically where the movie goes. It just kind of gets dark. And I don't want to ruin the end of it for you. Definitely go watch Cool as Ice, but this movie has a 3% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, it's not that low. I've seen way worse movies.
But see, almost you can't argue with it, because the way it works on Rotten Tomatoes, this is an aggregate. Every individual person couldn't find anything good to say about it. even though they might have hated other movies more, the more people had the consensus that it was terrible. So it was built up to this, you know, built down to this 3%, when actually I've seen movies that were way worse than this. As a matter of fact, in out of the movies that we've watched lately, so we got Cocktail, American Ninja, what was before that? Oh, Runaway.
Runaway, I
would say this one's behind Cocktail for me in terms of just overall enjoyment, because the nostalgia factor.
Well, it's like, and I will say a lot of times on like, what I always kind of hate about like reviews, especially on like Rotten Tomatoes and so on, is people like, they don't look at the full like spectrum. Like I can look at a movie and maybe like say like the story's off, and maybe the acting's off or something, but like the cinematography, like I mean like the cinematography in this movie outbeats a lot of big directors' movies, I will say. Like the cinematography like kills it in this one. And that's going to raise it up for me. I mean, I know that some people go like, well, I don't go to a movie to see cinematography. I'm like, you know,
it makes a difference. Man, that even might if be a filmmaker thing.
Yeah, it does make one there. I mean, I'll say this. This is that kind of movie that I was hoping was going to be like amazing. I was hoping this was going to be like that treasure trove that I just missed out on from the 90s, but like I could now add it to there. And I'll say I enjoyed it, but it was like a middle of the road movie. That's kind of where I'd leave off at. It's like a 2 out of 4for me.
It's a time capsule more than anything.
And yeah, it's almost cooler in that sort of way than it actually is.
It's definitely better in retrospect. Like if this is one of those things like, okay, you're in the 90s, Vanilla Ice is in the zeitgeist. He's like a big deal at that time. You don't like this. You actually kind of hate the guy. You're like, what a douchebag. Then you're going to come out here and do a movie. But because he's just so attached to a certain time that now when you go back and revisit it, it's you kind of have a more open mind to it. And it's, I mean, it's still bad. He's not a good actor. I do think he gets better as the movie goes along, though.
Yeah. Well, he's good in other stuff that he's in, like some of the Adam Sandler movies he's in and so on.
Yeah, this wasn't his. It should have been more either more comedy or just a series of vignettes that were music videos. But either way, it was well shot. It was kind of fun. It has kind of an interesting plot, even though it's weird how it all ties together and some of it could have just not been there. But it's definitely not a 3%. It's definitely not that. It's if you were to base it off that one scene I sent you, now that's a 3%.
That scene's almost so amazing. I would have gave it like a 90%.
Yeah,
that.
It's 90% in your heart, but 3% in terms of just like, okay, dialogue bad.
It's weird and bizarre, but that's almost like that's almost what makes it more fun.
It's almost like The Room. It's so bad it's good. That scene in particular is about as, when you talk about things that are so bad it's so good, that's one of the best scenes I've ever seen for that, is just the whole cat scene. It's, there's a lot of that in here, but it's fun. I definitely can't put it up there with Spice World or 8 Mile or Purple Rain or
any of the Beatles movies.
Hard Day's Night, which Spice World is almost like a Hard Day's Night when you look at it.
Yeah, it really is. Well, I think that's almost like what they're sort of going for. Yeah, as far as it's one of those ones, like, it's not, like, I was expecting this to be just, I don't know, maybe in my mind. Sometimes I see stuff like this and I just go, oh, this is going to be so amazing. And then I like kind of build up. And don't get me wrong, I still liked it. And, you know, as long as you kind of like, you dig that kind of like, that dance kind of like era, kind of mixed match between like dance club, R&B, like rap kind of music, like it's got a good soundtrack to it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think if you were going in the, okay, we'll look at it from both perspectives. If you're in the 90s and you're going to see a Vanilla Ice movie, I think you got what you paid for. Nobody did it.
Oh, yeah.
Because it only made $600,000. But it.
Yeah.
If you were paying to see a Vanilla Ice movie, you got what you wanted to see. You got that. Mm-hmm. In retrospect, is it a good movie by conventional standards? Absolutely not. But as a time capsule, it's valuable.
Yeah.
And if you really love 90s shit, if you really love the 90s aesthetic, if you really like late 80s, early 90s hip hop, this movie's a must see for that, because it really is, it captures a moment in time and a niche in time. And it really brings that to life. So if you've never seen Cool as Ice, go watch it. It's not streaming right now, but there are places where you can rent it and different things like that. But it does stream periodically. I think, I'm pretty sure I've seen it on Prime, and I think it's usually on one of the adjacent, like Tubi or Pluto, where you have to watch commercials. It's usually on one of those, yeah, too. So it just happens to not be right now, but usually it is.
Yeah. One of the kind of weird things, too, is just like right before this, I watched again was The Last Dragon. Mm. And that movie is kind of, this sounds so weird, but that movie's almost made similar how this one is, too, because it's like, you know, that's like a kung fu movie that's mixed match between a kung fu movie and a giant music video, in a sense. And that's almost like, I mean, this is not a kung fu movie. It's got a fight scene in it.
Yeah, a bad one.
But it has like that kind of feeling where it's like it kind of crisscrosses back and forth between you're watching a music video and then you're watching a regular movie. And
Last Dragon was Berry Gordy, right?
Well, yeah. And that's just one of those ones because that's like such a time capsule of like that movie's almost so 80s that it's almost more 80s than like you would ever expect an 80s movie to be. Like it feels like that's like when someone makes a movie nowadays and they want to make it feel extremely 80s, so they almost go beyond like what an actual movie would be. That's almost how that movie kind of is in a weird way.
Yeah, that movie. Did you review that with me and John that one time?
No, I never did.
John Davison, who's been on the podcast a million times, loved that movie. This one, I think that he said it, other than Ninja Turtles, it's his favorite movie of all time, The Last Dragon.
Oh, I can see that because that's just one of the, it kind of fits in one of those movies where it's like, that could be like, hey, you grow up, that's your jam. I mean, I'll say this, coming back to Cool as Ice, if you kind of grew up, and let's just say you, as a kid, almost like you were like Tommy or whatever in this movie, or whatever the kid's name is, the brother to a cat. If you were about that age and you were really obsessed with Vanilla Ice, you could see where this movie would have been those one that you would have grown up and be like, dude, I watched this so much on VHS and so on like that. Like this, you know what I mean? Like there's got to be a certain person out there that, because you know, that's almost sort of how those kind of movies are. It doesn't always have to be necessarily the best movie. It just happened to be the right movie that you watched at the right time that timed into what you were into and that, you know, that kind of defines you as a person. Like I could see this movie really being that.
Well, music also like ties into certain times. Like for me, I'll give you an example. My favorite summer I've ever had, probably my favorite year, was 1999, summer of 99. Not in terms of like big life events, there's other years that are better, just in terms of having fun all summer long. That summer was good.
That's what I call that the greatest year ever, was that time period. Like that, like, you know, I always just say 98 into 99. Like I always looked at that, I was like, number one time. Yes. Like I don't know, like that was that period where I looked at, that was like the one time I could say everything was amazing. Like just there was nothing bad that like it at all at that
99 was a good,
just like all was good.
Great.
The movies were amazing. I mean, that's when Pokemon came out for America, so that's what's always a really big deal for me too. Yeah. You know, like there's so much
great,
cool stuff.
Great movies that year, great music that year. But I always, that summer, even though I didn't listen to pop music that much, I remember I would go to the beach, I spent almost that whole summer in Florida. With my grandparents, and I would, you know, ride my bike around, go to the beach, go to the pool, hang out. And then when it was lunchtime, I would go take a break, go back to this little camper thing we were staying in. And I would just turn on the TV and eat. And it was the VH1 Top 20. And the songs from that particular summer, I can remember almost that entire Top 20. I remember it was If You Have My Love by J-Lo. Austin Powers was out. So you had Beautiful Stranger by Madonna. Above Me by that, what is that guy's name? I can't remember his name now. But you had Kiss Me by, you know, whatever. You had this whole, I can remember that. And so if you, 1991 or 1990, you're really doing something fun and Ice Ice Baby was on the radio, it's tied to that point in time. So if you, if those years were a big deal to you, you got to go back and watch this movie because it'll take you back for sure.
Yeah, I definitely think it is. It's one of those flicks. As long as you like Vanilla Ice, that's like the only kind of key thing. I mean, I guess you could watch it and not like Vanilla Ice, but like, I feel if you kind of have at least some kind of like admiration for him and so on, this movie's, it's fun at least, and it's different. And it's for filmmaking standards, it's just got a lot of really cool shots and creativity in it, you know?
Yeah,
you know,
very impressed by that, some of the shots. When I saw Jenny's Kaminsky did the cinematography, that took it to another level for me. I was like, oh my God, this is, you know, I mean, this guy, two Oscars, Schindler's List and Saving Private Ryan. So just for, if you don't know who he is, that's the two movies that he did. He won the best cinematography for. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, and you could, I mean, it sounds weird. This movie's like right before Schindler's List. And it's like one of those ones though. It's like the shots in this thing though. You see the talent there. I mean, like,
how the hell did he get on Spielberg's radar? Like, what? I wonder what the thing was that.
Yeah, was Steven watching Cool as Ice?
I think so.
I do too. Steven always feels like the guy who's kind of like almost a little bit like younger and hipper than like anybody else around him, maybe in a weird way. Maybe not like as hip as like the regular folks, but you know, like he seems like the guy who would be into more like, you know, I mean, like he was the kind of person like in the 70s who like had his own arcade at his mm-hmm. house and so on.
He was cooking other directors like a pound of bacon. Yeah. So yeah, cool as ice. Go watch it. Go enjoy it. Go back in time. It's cool as ice. It's awesome. It's really kind of a fun movie. I would say around the same thing about 204. I mean, I did get what I expected though. In some ways, it was better than I expected, especially artistically. In some ways, the acting just was even. There were scenes in there that weren't just so bad; they were good. They were just boring. And yeah. And some of that was there, and it just it didn't have that charisma or energy all the way through, which is kind of weird. But definitely go watch it. I think I definitely recommend it. It's worth it just as a time capsule alone. So any last thoughts on Cool as Ice before we break out of here?
No, I think that's about pretty solid all in all. You know, it's just a good, interesting flick. I think that's the best way to sort of go with
it. Just throw it out there. Mm-hmm. If you want to have a bad movie night, if you want to do a back-to-back double feature, you could do a David Kellogg double feature with Cool as Ice and Inspector Gadget.
Yeah, his only two movies other than like a buttload of like commercials and music videos.
Gosh, man.
I remember seeing Inspector Gadget in theaters too. Because, you know, the cartoon was like, you know, my jam growing up. And then it's like, okay, well, let's go see the live action movie. And it's just like, It's that one that you kind of just go like, dude, you should have got Doc Brown to like play Inspector Gadget.
Twice. Godzilla and Inspector Gadget. You're trying to make Matthew Broderick an action star. Just stop it. It worked in War Games that one time.
I thought you were going to say you should have got Doc Brown for Godzilla. I'm like, well, I would have saw that too.
I would have saw you. Yeah.
If he was the crazy like earthworm like scientist, like, yeah.
Yeah. Put Christopher Lloyd in anything, it's getting better.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter what it is, but like I always thought, like, dude, Christopher Lloyd was made to be like Inspector Gadget almost or something like that. That's who you should have got. It doesn't really matter how old he is, you know. Even, you know, he's 10 years older than Back to Future Part 3. Less than that, actually, at that point, so. Matthew
Broderick. I have a weird hate for him. I know it's unfair. I just do. I like his early, I love Ferris Bueller, and War Games is one of my favorite 80s movies, period. I mean, it's literally probably my top five 80s movies. But that's a whole other podcast. It's another time. So thanks for listening. You can always find Via VHS on social media at Via VHS on Twitter. Or you go to Instagram and find us at Via VHS Pod. I'm flirting with the idea of TikTok, but I hate it. I just want to say for the record, I absolutely hate it.
I just wonder how that works for promoting podcasts on. I mean, I'm assuming obviously it does work, but
there's little videos I've thought about doing. There's some ideas I have, and I thought that would be a good avenue for it. I'll try it out, but I never got onto this Snapchat thing. Never did that. I like downloaded it a few times and played on it for like 5 minutes. I'm like, I hate this. That's kind of where I'm at with TikTok. I'm like, I'm probably not going to do this.
Sometimes it just becomes too much excess work on the table.
It does.
You know, you gotta maintain so many other sites.
And it gets addictive from what I've heard. I mean, the stuff I've seen on there is funny. I mean, there is really funny stuff on there. Don't get me wrong. It's just wanting to participate in it. Let me be old a little bit. Let me just have one thing where I'm old. So, But anyway, if you want to find any of Spencer's work, you can go to oldmanorange.com, find all kinds of cool stuff there of Pizza Boys and Old Man Orange podcast and other various podcasts. And, you know, you're kind of a vanilla ice. You're kind of a renaissance man, kind of a do-all.
I do got a lot of variety of different things going on always. So, yeah, I take that
as a compliment. Yeah, I meant it as a compliment, definitely.
I know. I mean, I'd like.
You know, you're better than vanilla ice. I'll say that. You probably have much less of a rap sheet.
Well, I mean, he's got a pretty big rap sheet.
When I hear that hi-hat. Yeah, anyway. Well, thanks for listening to the Via VHS podcast. Go find us on social media. Stay tuned for new episodes coming up soon. And with that, word to your mother, Via VHS is out.